have a good time. Put a smile on your face, yeah. KBKM and Elation Radio. Even brighten your day and help you through the night. Bring you good music. KBKM and Elation Radio. And here's your host.
Thank you, Kimmy.
Shout out D on the track. Paint Music Media. Shout out DJ Lee Productions. And I'm Al Care. But if you a game changer, got my head. My grind don't hide. Win, lose, or drought. I'ma ride till I die. I go hard in that lane. My God is the aim. Put me in, coach.
Nothing left to give it that reverence that the Father gets. So every day I work the sweat, can get a flesh another rest. They say go hard or go home. I say just do whatever's best. It's evident I'm blessed and I work like it. Fight like a Viking, fight like a lichen. The difference is I like it, so I shine like I'm lightning. So I'm going head to head with certain tests. Who you liking? Yeah. So it's time for coach to put me in. I'm strapping on my shoulder pads, lacing up my cleats, and then I'm gone with the wind. Like I'm gone in 60 seconds. You can't hold me, you can't check me. Check the memo, check the message running through. Like I'm bad as I'm trucking whoever's standing in my way. Ain't no way you gon' stop me. You better off to let me in. Cause I go hard even though they say no way that I could win. Like I'm Brett Favre, I'ma ride this game. My head is in the sky, my grind don't hide. I'ma ride till I die. I go hard in that lane. My God is the aim. Put me in, coach, and watch me change the game. Cause I'm a game changer. 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 I'm a game changer.
Yeah, I told you once before, my God came to change the game. Different outlook, hope to life, a different way to play the lane. Now my rushing yards just got rocketing, now I'm so insane. For the kingdom building, now my shot, it cannot be contained. So I'm gon' pray for change, for myself and then what I can. I don't need no euros or no pesos or no money grams. Shout out to Wado, cause I know that he gon' play this fam. The FCA sports camp, game changer, summer jam. I don't need a 100 grand to tell him that they need the lamb. It's heaven, it's just who I am. This where I stand, man. I'm gon' play the fist. Hit so deep and turn it quick. It's like I'm out from the trap to turn around, get back in it. Never that's insane. It's evident your butt they chain. Like I'm Chad Johnson, the same year he changed his name. So I sacrifice my life for the cause just to win. And if you a game changer, let me see you represent.
My grind don't hide. Win, lose, or drought. I'ma ride till I die. I go hard in that lane. My God, I'm a game changer, 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 I'm a game changer.
Now put me in, coach, 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 I'ma go hard,
I'ma go hard, I'ma go hard.
I'm a game changer.
Good evening, everybody. I love that song. I'm a game changer. Today is the Friday, January 19th. This is a wonderful year, 2024 of our Lord. Today, I'm glad to be back. Hope everybody had a good time. It's just going to be me and Jason talking to y'all a little bit today. I want to continue kind of just talking about what's expected of us as men. It's just going to be a lot of fun. Before we get started, I want to say, hey, Sis Kim, make sure you're doing all right. Glad God is continuing to bless you. Is my brother Jason on with me right now? All right, I know he's getting on. He might be muted out, but hey, we're gonna push ahead just a little bit. I was just doing a little reading today, and man, you know, this whole year again, it's about how to do life a little bit better and how to really focus more on God. And I think one of the things that I was just thinking about, I was just thinking like obedience, you know. What is Jesus, you know, when you think about Christ, what does Christ expect of us? And brothers, don't get upset with me. I put everything on the backs of the men. I'm sorry if I do that. I was having a discussion with a pastor friend of mine today, and I could tell he was frustrated. And we were talking about the demise of our society and what's the biggest contributor to, you know, our society kind of just being what it's being right now. And his big push and his thought was, he said, well, I think our society would be better. No, he didn't say better. He basically said our society, the reason our society is the way it is because of fornication. I'm like, what? And his argument to me was, well, you mean to tell me that he basically said it like this. He said, if we had no fornication, then our marriages could stay together. I said, man, are you for real? Like, we got into this deep discussion, and his big thing was, if we didn't have any fornication in this world, then the marriages would be better, the kids would be better, and our society as a whole would be better. No doubt, no fornication would solve a lot of problems in our society. It ain't going to fix what's broken. I'm sorry. I will argue that to anybody. I don't care what your theological background is. You might be, you got a PhD from seminary. I don't care. I'm going to argue that till I leave this earth. That's not the only problem we have in our society, even though. So anyway, I'm going to come bring it on back. I'm going to bring it on back. I'm going to bring it back to what we're talking about tonight. So, you know, we're talking about just. How can we as men, how can we be more responsible? And so in this discussion I was having with this pastor friend of mine, we both came to the conclusion of this. Okay, it's not just fornication. It's not just one thing that is causing problems in our society. It's a multitude. But we both agreed that he's been doing a lot of counseling with broken homes. And the biggest problem he's seeing in these broken homes is fornication. So we broke it down to that. Now, where am I going with this? J-Dub, I'm going to bring you in just a second. But where am I going with this? I'm going right here. This is where I'm going. Brothers, as they said in Julius Caesar, friends, Romans, countrymen, friends, Americans, human beings, right? We're the ones, you know, we're the beginning of this. And we're to stand in as intermediaries, intercessors for the problems that we have. And how does this line up with our theme for this whole year? Is we're trying to do this life better. So with that being said, I want to bring Jason on in. Because I was about to go and read out of Matthew, but I'm not going to do it. Not just yet. I'm going to do it a little bit later. But J-Dub, how's your day been, man? You on? Thought I heard you there.
Man, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Man, I'm doing good. I've had a fantastic day. I'm having a fantastic year. 2024 may only be, 19 days old, but I'm having a fantastic year. And I'm trying to change my attitude towards the things that don't go my way in life, like that discussion I was having with the other pastor. It wasn't going my way. But I'm really putting forth some effort and really trying to open up my mind and put on what we like to call my critical thinking hat. You know what I'm saying? And
I like that conversation you were having. And I think
I
think if we think about it, I think fornication to me is the outcome, but I think the issue is the heart. And what you see come out of that, one of them is fornication, right? But when you talk about broken homes, you know, what's the root of fornication? Selfishness, right? And then when you start talking about those type of heart issues, you know, the selfishness, the pride, the anger, you know, whatever those things in your heart, lust, you know, those things are heart conditions. And I think for me, especially with men, those are things we don't talk much about. Are those heart issues?
So okay. Well, you know what, bro? You brought it up. Let's talk about some of those, because you know, man, you said two things, and that's one of them stuck with me. You said at the root of fornication is selfishness. Oh, man, you got to explain that to me. You got to explain that to me. Explain it for everybody. Let's understand that, because I would have never said, I mean, honestly, I would have never said, there are some cases where it's obvious, but there are other cases where it's not so obvious. Explain that, if you would.
So for me, when you think about, like, that fornication, especially in that marital relationship, you've made a commitment to one person, and for some reason you want to step outside that. Now, most guys will focus on the part of, well, I'm not getting this from her, or, you know, I had this feeling about this other woman. But what they don't think about is the fact that, hey, are you thinking about the other person, right? Are you thinking about that woman you made that commitment to, right? And you said, like, you know, for better or for worse, you know, through richer or for poor, to death do us part. Or are you thinking about yourself and what you're not getting, what you're not, you know, what you don't have, you know, those type of things, right? Because that, to me, is when I think about selfishness is the big thing. And when I talk to men, especially in that condition, they don't want to hear that. They want to hear about what they're feeling and almost justifying the actions that they want to take, and not just taking a step back and saying, like, I'm being selfish. I'm not thinking about, you know, those people, those broken homes, you know, like your pastor friend was talking about. I'm not thinking about my wife. I'm not thinking about my kids. I'm not thinking about, you know, the people who look up to me and the people who are paying attention to what I'm doing.
Okay, but well, fornication go two ways, though. I mean, it ain't just the men who cheat. Women do the same thing.
Right.
But we ain't talking about women. We talking about brothers, right? We folks.
Right,
okay,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. But the thing about it, like, when you go down to the heart, that's something that's not gender specific, right? You know, a heart, you know, that heart condition that causes these things, it doesn't care about gender, it doesn't care about race, it doesn't care about age. It's just that sinful heart that is part of our nature.
But can you understand, though, like, why some of us as men, we would, when you say, well, fornication is a problem in the household, you say it's an act of selfishness, but you just gave the example of a man. And I'm not trying to be funny, but can you understand why a man would be a little bit upset about that? You know, that you first jumped on him? I'm just saying, I'm going to be quiet, though, because I'm going to be quiet.
No,
I'm about to go
but you started it off right. We do put a lot of onus on the man, and that's only because Scripture puts a lot of onus on the man, right?
Oh, we need
you
to.
Know?
Don't get me wrong. I believe that we're not at fault, but responsible a lot of times. Sometimes we at fault, but. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it is hard to hear, right? If I'm in my feelings and I'm feeling sorry for myself, I'm looking for someone to commiserate with me and tell me how bad it is. And you know, it's really not my fault. It's somebody else's fault. And I'm going to be real. Sometimes to allow yourself to emote is one thing, but then you've got to come back to your reality, right? You got to come back to your truth. I always say the same thing. Feelings are real. They're valid. But they may not be the truth. So you always got to come back to your truth. And the truth is, you know, if I'm whatever situation I'm in as a man, I've got to trust my God to get me through it, whatever it is. And it's not about this person and what they're doing. My wife ain't doing right. My kids ain't acting right. My boss tripping about this. The bill collector tripping about that. It ain't about none of those people.
Yeah.
It's about me and
that's
my
right.
relationship with God. And that's what I have to focus on.
See, I like that because that is nothing but truth that you are spouting right there. So okay, why don't we do this? Why don't we do this? Let's just think. I'm going to be writing a couple of things, or I've written a couple of things down. Because some of the problems that I've identified, that I've noticed, and this is from my experience as a pastor myself. You know, I went on that trek, and, man, I'm telling you, one of the most thankless yet humbling experiences I've ever had in my life was being a leader of God's people. And I tell you what was so humbling about it is you have to, because we're talking about us as men, and we're talking about how can we do life better, how can we do this Christian life better. But one of the things that I learned, Jason, and I think you and I, we talked about this before, but one of the things I learned was this. I learned how to love people through whatever thing that they were going through. You hear me rattling some paper. I'm just going to write some stuff. But I learned how to love people. I learned how to truly love people in the mess. In other words, if somebody fell in a raw sewer, they just fell in this sewer water, and it was just nasty, and they came and you helped them get out of there, you crawled down there or you squatted or kneeled down and you grabbed their hand and they covered in this filth and it smells horrible, makes you want to puke, and then they were drowning and you pulled them out and the first thing they want is a hug. And you have to give them a hug. And even though they covered in the muck, I mean the worst foul stench you ever smelled, and it looks horrible, and they got excretions all over them and paper and just all kinds of stuff. Imagine how horrible that is. And you have to give them a hug. I want you to understand that that is us to God. And yet he still hugs us. He still loves us. But I truly learned the meaning of that from being a leader in the church, because it's easy for us to sit up on our quote unquote, our thrones, our high horses, and to talk down about people when we don't have to be a part of their lives, right? Right. It's easy for us to point the finger when, you know, they're not close to us. They're not a part of our lives. But, oh, when you begin to lead people, when you are out front and you are with them and you have to get in the muck with them and you have to love them through, because y'all do understand that most of the problems we have in life, it's our own fault sometimes, right? Most of the time, it's our own fault. It's our decision. So I bring that out, Jason, and say this. In the Christian home, let's name a couple of issues we have in the Christian home. And it's funny because as I'm sitting here and we were talking, I was writing some things down. And come from a man's point of view and come from a biblical point of view, I think one of the problems, I'm just going to tell you, one of the problems I think we have in our homes, in our Christian homes, one of the biggest issues we have is materialism. Like, think about this, and tell you how I get to that. It's because when you think of what are we doing when we're at home? What are our kids doing nowadays when they're at home, Jason? They're at home.
Either
they don't have no schoolwork. They got a friend.
Some type of media.
So some type of media. So they might be looking at TV. They might be looking at videos on the internet. They might be listening to the radio. And what's the one thing? How do all of these mediums, how do they pay their bills? You often hear during Monday Night Football or any kind of program that's got a host, they say, we got to pay some bills. What are they saying? What's about to come next? There it is. And what are commercials for? For the network to make money, right? And in order for the network to make money on sales, they've got to be pushing a product. In other words, they're advertising. And I think that this materialism that we have is that we see something on TV and we want it. We want what we see. And what happens to parents? What do parents do with their kids? They allow these different mediums to babysit their kids. right?
Right.
So what we do is we substitute the presence of the parent with things to keep our kids busy. And what happens? They lead our kids to value things more than people. Would you agree that's a problem that we have?
Mm-hmm.
And since you agree that that's a problem that we have, how can we fix that? As men in the household, as fathers, as brothers,
I think
cousins,
men,
and friends.
We gotta go. What's what? Oh, I think as men, we gotta, you know, lead. And one of the things we have to do is we can't let our electronics parent our children. You know, we gotta put our phones down as leaders, and then demand that they put their phones down and say, we're going to engage one another in conversation. We're going to talk. We're going to share life. We're going to share stories. We're going to, you know, talk about like the things that we're going through, and allow communication to happen, allow fellowship to happen, and allow wisdom to be transformed, to be transferred, you know, and not just from as the man to someone else, but to receive the wisdom from the people that God placed in my life, from my wife, from my kids.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's what we have to do to change the trajectory.
See, I totally agree with that, because, you know, I'm finding a lot of the issues we have in our households, it's because of the way we're living our lives. I think you're 100% right with that, Jason. And I think you're right there when you say, well, we got to lead. But that's usually the biggest, believe it or not, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think one of the biggest problems we have as men in our homes is just trying to be a leader. We don't know how to lead. See, we don't know how to lead. Here's what I mean. When I talk to people about, let's say, my military service, right?
Right.
Like, sometimes people think I done something big because I've been to combat. And I'm the one to tell you, man, it is not that serious. I don't ever want to go back to that place. But there was a time in my life when I couldn't, that's the only way I knew how to function. I didn't know how to be no civilian. I didn't know what that was about. You know what I'm saying? I spent my whole early life learning how to be a soldier. I didn't know how to do the other stuff. And it was tough. But so as men, and what did the military teach you? They taught me how to, hey, you got to take it on the chin sometimes. Sometimes it's going to hurt, but you got to take it and you got to keep going. So how do we as men, how do the brothers who are confused like I was, how do they learn how to do it the right way? There's only one way. And that's the way that Jesus taught us.
Right.
Jesus. Go ahead.
Those
bro.
Principles
Go ahead.
In the Bible, right? Those principles in the Bible are the principles that can help us. And even the absence of a worldly father in that masculine role, we have a earthly father who would be more than happy to give us guidance and direction. And what I've really found out is when you seek that heavenly father, he will surround you with men to help you, right? It's one of those things, even in spite of our circumstances, we're able to persevere and push on.
Yeah, because one of the things I found, passages about that very thing, Jason, comes out of Philippians, or if you, depending on who you are, some people say Philippians, and I say Philippians, but there's a passage, I believe it's chapter 3, I'm not for sure the exact verse, but it's somewhere around verse 4, and it starts off saying something like, he talks about having confidence in your own self, having confidence in your own flesh, and it goes on where he says, basically, I'm thinking as I'm talking, but he basically says that, how does it go? Hold on. It says something like watch out for those dogs, evildoers, those mutilators of the flesh, for it is we who are circumcision, we who serve God by his spirit, who boast in Christ Jesus, and who put on confidence in the flesh, who put no confidence in the flesh. And he goes on to say something, though I myself have reasons for such confidence, if someone else thinks that they have reasons to put confidence in the flesh, I have more circumcised on the eighth day of people. And then it says of Israel and the tribe of Benjamin, and it goes on. But I think what he's saying is what we got to do. We got to stop putting so much confidence in our flesh as men. That's why we walk around here so gung-ho. That's why I was so caught up before, is because I had all this confidence in my flesh. Remember before the cancer? Remember before the accident? You know, I felt like I could do any and everything. And, you know, I felt like Superman. Remember that? Remember what you always ask me? You always ask me, when do they get to see Clark Kent? Remember one of my big complaints about dating? You say, when do they get to see Clark Kent? They always see Superman. So how do we show we need to show our families Clark Kent. We need to show our kids. If we want to get our kids out of this material world, Madonna sang about that material world 30 years ago. You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. All the way back. Actually, it's more like 40 years ago. You know, she sang about the material world. I am a material girl. Ooh. You know, that's how we do it. And the way we get to that point, Jason, I think, is I'm going to bring up another problem we have in the family. As I write this stuff down, I'm just going to bring it up, okay? Is that the balance of work and family. As men, don't you think that's part of our responsibility?
Right, but you know, just as we pivot from the materialism, and I think this goes into the same thing. Unfortunately, uh-huh. You know, we were talking about this in our men's group yesterday. Wednesday, where our identity as men is sometimes founded in our ability to provide, and when we think about provision, our thoughts go immediately through financial, right? And making sure my wife has the nicest cars, the fanciest dresses, the prettiest purses, the jewelry, making sure my kids have the stuff that they need, you know, their shoes, their clothes, their backpacks, being in all the different events. And so this materialism, you know, for a lot of men is I think part of it is because, you know, that's something that they seek for. But I think part of it is that identity. And, of course, in order to gain that material wealth, in order to get that stuff, you have to work and you have to grind. And you put more focus on that part of the provision aspect of your family. Like, hey, let me make sure, you know, I got the money to keep us in this really nice house, you know, to keep us driving these nice cars, you know, to make sure we can take these vacations and create these memories that these kids want. So I, you know, when we talk about materialism and that work-life balance, I think that's part of that I'm gonna call it dysfunctional identity that we have ourselves as men.
So wait a minute, hold on, man. So you mean tell me I shouldn't want to go to work and work, spend all my time and energy at work so I can provide the best for my family? I shouldn't want to do that.
You should think about what you think the best is. So I would say no, because what you're giving them financially, you know, what you're giving them financially, they're missing in relationally, right? You know, it was one of those times, it was really interesting. I was talking to one of our kids at church, and, you know, he was going through some hard times, and we were talking, you know, he was struggling in school and just not doing well. And you know, his dad, you know, had some means about him, you know, had some money, you know, buying him stuff, sending him therapy, doing all this other stuff. And then he just broke down in tears, you know, young man, 17 years, you know, about 16 years old, you know, and just broke down in tears. Like, I just want my dad to be there and be my dad. And when you... when you see that, it really hurt my heart. Now, I went to go and talk to the brother in church and told him what was going on. And, you know, don't get me wrong, young dude's been balling and, you know, he's made a name for himself. But, you know, when I saw that, it just helped me realize that sometimes it's not about the money. It's about the relationships. And you know, and as men, we sometimes get lost in, like I said, that provision role. And I think there's no problem that we want to provide, but I think we're short-sighted in our provision, right? How many times do you hear a man talk about, you know what, I got to provide an emotional place for my son to learn. I got to provide spiritual provision for my child. I got to provide emotional provision for my family. You know, I got to provide that relational provision for my family. We don't talk about that. We talk about the physical provision, right? The financial provision. You know, and I think as men, that's where we go short, is that we don't talk about those other aspects of provision that we need.
You know what's funny is as you're talking, I was reminded of a scripture. Now I can read this one. I looked it up in Ecclesiastes. and what it says is in verses, let's see what chapter I'm in, but it's Ecclesiastes. Chapter 12, verses 13 and 14. And it goes in what you're saying. It says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. And I'm hearing you talk. Oh, you can go ahead and finish, but I'm hearing you talk, and I'm saying, oh, you're really saying something. You need a place for his son. But how do we do that? I mean, how do you do it, Jason? Because remember, I've often told you, I've never seen a more dedicated father. You know.
Yeah, and you know, for us, it's we're not trained. If we're being truly transparent, we're not trained to emote with our family members, our wife and our kids, and to give that emotional provision. We're not trained for that. You know, so the first thing is recognizing our shortcomings. It's like, you know what? I mean, I don't know how to cry with you, son. I don't know how to emote with you. I don't know how to create that provision. But the beautiful thing is when we get into that space and then, you know, we recognize we don't have the ability, you know, and we truly desire that, if we go to God, he'll share that with us. And he'll walk us through a journey of self-discovery where we learn how to emote first and foremost with ourselves and then to lead our family through that. So, you know, it's one of those things that you have to have a desire for it, and then trust God that once you communicate that desire, he can feel it. But it's not the place. It's not a natural, comfortable place for us as men, because it's counterintuitive to everything we're taught. I mean, you just mentioned
you
when you're
that?
In Army. Yeah, uh-huh. Think about it. When you're in Army, what did you just say? Suck it up. Right?
Yeah, they told you to suck it up.
Army.
The tough times. Suck it up. Drive
right.
on. But I will say this, though. I will say this. My dad, being a veteran and being a combat veteran, just like myself, of the men in my family, there's my dad, two older brothers my dad had from a previous marriage, two brothers. Then I had two brothers that were older than myself. So I'm the number 5 on the boy list, and I'm number 10 on the kids list. But my dad and I were the two that experienced combat headlong. I mean, like, we were on the front lines. Now, my brother had a brother older than me, and he experienced it, but he experienced it from a different aspect. You know, he wasn't on the front lines, but he did experience the combat. So I'm here to tell you, no matter where you experience it, changes your way of thinking. It changes your attitude. But my dad was a very stern man. I mean, extremely. But at the same time, he was still that guy that you're describing who was in touch with his feelings. I didn't understand them. Right. Personally, I didn't understand. I just wasn't put together that way. So as I got older, I you're right. I didn't know how. And the way I learned, I started to learn, I began. I was in my mid-20s by now. It's from having conversations with my dad. And my dad passed away when I was 28. But those last 5 years of his life were when I got to know him. Everything before that, I don't know what else. I didn't know him. I think what you're saying is if we can learn to relate to our sons or all of our children, but definitely our sons emotionally, we can teach them how not to go through what we went through. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Because I think that's really important. If we want to do life better, that's one of the things we got to get a handle on because, my favorite thing to say about fighting is there's trained and there's untrained. There's no such thing as you can't fight. You're either trained or you're untrained, right? And when it comes to being open to your children, your spouse, to your family emotionally, there's trained and there's untrained. And, man, but how do we navigate this life if we're going to be soft like that? Like I give you for instance. I know guys, for some reason, they think a certain former president is just a tough guy. He's a mobster. Oh, he's my kind of guy. And then another former president, because he showed his wife all kinds of love and respect, they call him soft. And they don't want to really respect him the way they want to respect the one who's not considered soft. How do we get that into our society? How do we learn? How do we raise a generation of gentlemen as opposed to a generation of tough guys? Uh-huh, go ahead.
I mean, you said it, like gentlemen, and we have to make it okay to be loving, to show affection, to be able to share our emotions. I would tell you the weirdest thing. I would, go places and especially events with young people, and I would see Middle Eastern men, right? And I would see them like hug and kiss their sons like on the lips, and it was the weirdest thing. And because in our Western culture, we think like that affection between men is crazy to see. But I watch the fathers and sons, and you see the relationships that and the closeness that have been formed. And I had to take a step back and challenge my own thoughts. I'm like, man, I know I kiss my daughter on the forehead. I kiss my daughter when I meet her. You know, why can't I kiss my son? And it takes steps like that to be like, you know what, I'm not going to let society define this. I'm going to tell my son it's okay to show affection, right? It's okay for your daddy to show you affection like I would your sister, like I would, you know, like I would any other person that I love. So I think it really starts with us as men becoming comfortable. And I think first and foremost, we got to understand that's our place. That's our role. Too many guys think, well, it's not my place to teach my kids how to manage their emotions. That's their mama job. You know, she's the woman. They deal with all that stuff. I need to teach them other stuff. And we're so quick to advocate that role that we have, not understanding, like, no, that is our role, right? And if you think about it, God teaches us how to manage our feelings. And he, you know, in his masculinity, and Christ did the same. They did not advocate their role of teaching us how to manage our feelings and emotions. Right? They never once said, okay, well, you know, Jesus never said, bring everything to me except for your feelings. Right? You know, he mourned when they mourned. He wept when they wept. And, you know, but he also showed us how to manage those feelings and emotions in a way that still allow us to the humanity of it and to feel the blessing they are from God, but not to let them overwhelm us and overcome us. So, it starts to change in our mindset to say, my job as a man is provision and make sure we cover every aspect of that provision.
You're 100% right, because I tell you what, Deuteronomy 6 and 7 says, you shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. We've got to teach this stuff to our kids. They've got to be trained to love. But how do we do that in this generation? Like my son is 27. He'll be, no, take that back. My son's 26. He'll be 27 in March. Your son is 17. He's got a birthday in what, June, July?
May.
When's your son's birthday?
April.
In May. In April.
Right.
Really? Wow. Our kids' birthdays are all there together.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, do you ever feel like there's a time? Because here it is. When you start to teach someone, like what we're talking about, it takes discipline. And I believe that one of the problems we have in our family, in our households right now, is a lack of discipline.
Right.
You know, like this world that we live in, the world and those advertisements that we talked about before, the world tells them you can be who you want to be, when you want to be, how you want to be. And then you remember when it was growing up with us, I know in my generation, I'm a couple of years ahead of you, but not much, so I'll say you too. But with us growing up, they say you could be anything you want to be. Am I right or wrong? That's what my parents used to tell us. You can be anything you want it to be. And then I noticed when some of my classmates start having kids, they start teaching their kids, you can be anything you want to be. Here it is. You can do anything you want to do. Now, how did you can be anything you want to be turn into you can do anything you want to do? You can. I was looking at a, I don't know, was this a movie? No, this was not a movie. I was looking at one of those court shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the show, there was an accident on the highway. It was a car that ran into another car. And
right.
It was loaded with some African-American teenagers. And it was a number of them. They all ran from the scene. And the report was the people who were driving this car, they took off running up this hill, and they had a baby with them. So anyway, at the top of this hill was this Applebee's restaurant. So the police, it's about 3 or 4 police officers, they go to the restaurant, and they go in, they start asking questions of the patrons. The manager of the restaurant said that, hey, we got this description of people y'all looking for, and we got 2 people here that fit that description. It was an African-American male, woman, and they had a baby, but they didn't have, it was only those three, but it, you know, the report was it was like 4 or 5 of them, right? Or it could have been
right.
More. So the police get to the Applebee's, they go to the table, and they asking this black couple questions. And the black couple, rather than answer the questions for the cops, they get attitudes. I mean, like, attitudes. Like, the police asked them, and they got this on video camera and cell phone footage. So, you know, the cop asked the guy, what car did y'all drive up in? And the guy said, I ain't going to tell you. I ain't got to talk to you. And the police, at some point, they didn't want to tell them why they were there investigating, but they finally told them, hey, we're investigating a hit and run. You fit the description of the suspect. The guy goes off. Then the guy walks away from the table, and the cops don't grab him. He walks away. Anyway, I'm gonna make it real quick. The girl, all of a sudden, she starts acting a fool. Now, the baby is still there, so the guy takes the baby with him. And so they figure, okay, we can question the girl. So they question her, and she starts acting just like the dude. Well, she starts saying, well, they both start saying, well, we're going to leave. And the cops are like, no, you can't. This is an active investigation. You're being detained. Anyway, make long story short, they start trying to fight the cops. Both of them get wrestled to the ground. The girl gets sprayed with mace. They snatch the baby from them, not in a harsh way. They take the baby, give the baby to a lady, to the manager at the store, call CPS to come get the baby, but at some point they wind up calling the girl's mom. Then they go in the bathroom. They continue to check the restaurant because there ain't enough people. They find all the people they're looking for in the bathroom, all of them. Ain't no baby. It's between 5 and 7 high school students. And And what they did was they did further investigation, according to what they showed us on TV. The investigation probably went on for over an hour. Now, you got 5 or 6 police outside doing this investigation. They done halfway tore up the restaurant. And then they figured it out. Okay, it was the kids in the bathroom who was in the car. One of the boys, one of the first ones they talked to was the one driving. He gets arrested. They let the other ones go. And the woman and the guy who ain't have nothing to do with this, they went to jail for resisting arrest. We teaching our kids you can do what you want to do, but we forgetting to teach them that there are consequences.
Right.
I went through the whole story just to get back to that. My apologies. I just wanted to put it out there. But we teach them you can do what you want to do. You can be who you want to be. You can be who you want to be professionally, educationally. You can't walk out here in the streets and do whatever you want to do. And then people, we always say how horrible of a job the cops are doing. Don't get it twisted. Some of these cops are horrible. Some of these cops are horrible. Not all of them. Not even the majority. Here you go. I'm finna say something else. A lot of these kids are horrible, but not all of them. And I think it's a small majority of them that aren't being raised right. But the problem is when you put social media and you put our TV media and radio, more and more of these kids are being touched by this. And these a lot of kids today, they're not very good at communicating. They don't know how to communicate. So you put all that together with a lack of discipline, man, where's the household going? How are we as men supposed to combat that mission? I mean, how do you fight that?
I mean, and that's the thing, right? It's bringing those core principles back. But I tell you, you know, and this is any relationship, right? You know, one of the things I've always heard, people don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care.
How much you care.
And I think the challenge is, you know, we've been duped to think that our role as men is not important. Oh, I forgot to tell you, I went to my son's football banquet last night, and this is a banquet end of the year. They're kind of giving out awards for the various players, trainers, the other students they weigh. But before they got started, they sent a special thanks out to other people that were involved. So they gave a thanks to the boosters. They gave a thanks to their sponsors. They gave a thanks to the teachers. They gave a thanks to the mothers. Guess who they did not give a thanks to?
Fathers.
There you go. I mean, just left the fire clean out of the picture. Because, and this is what I'm telling you, we've been duped to believe that our role and our position is irrelevant, right? You know, they were talking about the mothers and how important they are and how they help these young men and stuff like that. And a lot of the young men they don't have the dad in the home and stuff like that. But I will tell you, me sitting there as one of the fathers, I'm like, seriously? You know? But it was interesting that's where we are, and I think that was a microcosm of our culture. But I go back, I digress. Like I said, I think we've been due to believe that our role as men is not important in the lives of our kids, or our role has been limited to the disciplinarian. Our job is just to discipline our kids and make them tough, and that's the first thing we have to understand, is that the role of a father is the most important role. Right, it's not just disciplinarian, but it's pastor, it's preacher, it's provider, it's protector, it's emulating what it means to be a man of God, and once we realize that and we reject what culture tries to tell us our role is as father, then we step into it, and the crazy thing, and I experienced this myself. It is so crazy when you do it, because people look at you like you're weird. Like, why are you all involved in this? Why are you all up in your business? You know, how many times I had to fight the school to get the information that they really gave to the mother, right? And I'm like, you know, I'm the parent too. And they're like, oh, you know, and you know, so you know, it's not easy. It's not gonna be easy. You know, our culture has set us up for it to be difficult for us. But you know,
but
the beautiful
culture
thing about being man, you said what?
Do you think it's the culture though?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I think it's definitely the culture, right? Tell me one time, tell me the last time you've seen a man in our modern culture that is heterosexual, that is, you know, he understands his role as the man and not what they call the toxic masculinity, and is relevant and is competent. Tell me when you see that on TV. Tell me in our media where you see that. You don't. Right?
Wait a minute.
I know.
State that
I don't
again,
because
I missed part of that. State that again.
Tell me in our modern media, like television, movies, things like that, where you see a man, not a superhero, but just a regular old man who is competent, who is compassionate, who is the epitome of what a godly man looks like and is respected and loved by his family and shows them respect and love.
So show you a movie that displays what you said.
Yes.
Right? Well, I don't really look at TV much. Not those kinds of shows. I look at crime shows and murder shows. So I'm going to be the guy that says, I did see one movie where lately, and that was Candy Cane Lane with Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
But even in that movie, he lost his job. He was laid off his job. But he turned out to be, he was that competent father. But I will say, in your defense, not many.
Right.
When I was looking at TV, not many.
Right. And I think too many men have fallen into that. Too many men have fallen into, well, I'm not that important, right? Or that's what they got their mom for.
I want to push back on just that, though. I want to push back on that. I want to push back on that because in my experience in talking to a lot of men, a lot of brothers that we talk about, society didn't pigeonhole them. They pigeonhole them themselves. I'm not trying to be funny. And what I mean by that is they were taught a certain thing, and even though they didn't like the way it felt when they were growing up, guess what they did when they got older? The exact same thing. Did the exact same their father, exact same thing their father did. I tell you this about my dad. I grew up when I was in the 1980s, we called it the boom and bust 80s because economically life just wasn't all that great for us. And we got about five more minutes, Jake. We're going to take this up again next week. We'll talk more about it. But my dad would get a job, and he would work that job for a while. And something would happen. He'd get laid off. And he finally got this one really, 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 really good job, and he stayed on it for a while. Man, life was good for us. I mean, we was eating steak every night. You know what I'm saying? That's the best we had it in a long time. And something happened. So when I grew up and I got married, I said, I'm going to do whatever it takes to provide for my family, right? And I did whatever it took to provide for my family. But I was the husband who said, now mind you, in the beginning I had no children. And then I had my first child. I was like, you take care of the baby. If you want to work, fine, whatever. If you ain't got to, you ain't got to. But I'm going to grind. I'm going to get this done. But check this out. This is what my dad always taught me. No matter how many hours I worked, Jason, when I got home, you know what my priorities were? My family.
Okay.
And I always made it home. I always made it home. My wife would be cooking dinner, right? My daughter, when she was a baby, if she was crying, if she needed changing, I spent that time with her. Yeah, it's only an hour or so, but I would be with my daughter. I'd put her down. I'd go help my wife in the kitchen. We would fix dinner together. We sat at the table together, and we ate dinner together. But a lot of us as men, we ain't doing it. We ain't doing it. And my dad had a bunch of flaws, but that part wasn't one of them. But when I grew up, I thought I was going to spend, you know, I used to spend so much time working because I didn't want to be poor that I did neglect my family. Don't get it twisted. I wasn't perfect. I did neglect my family. And the way I neglected my family was, man, I would leave home early in the morning and I wouldn't come back until my wife would cook dinner late because I wasn't going to get home until after 8 p.m. I'd be gone all day. I mean, I got 12, 13 hours gone. She at home by herself. And then I would spend an hour with the baby, putting the baby to sleep. I would get up in the middle of the night with the baby. But I was still neglecting my family because I didn't spend much time with my wife, except on Saturdays. We spent time Saturday and Sunday. That was our 2 days. And Sunday, we spent half the day in church. So, you know what I'm saying? So I was still neglectful, but I did the best I knew how to do. I did the best I did. But the one thing we had, and I'm going to let you take back over the convo, but the one thing I did, I commend myself for. The one thing my wife and I had was, here it is. To me, it's one of the biggest things, communication. We had communication.
Well,
you can go ahead and finish what you're saying. That was, we had communication. And that's something else I learned from my dad. But go ahead. I'm going to let you finish.
No. I think that's really important. And you talked about it, how, you know, sometimes as men, we think we only have one job, and that's outside the home. And you know, we have to realize that when we get home, our real job just started then, right? You know, the job that God has ordained us for and created us for, it starts when you punch out at 5. And too many times we want to believe that when we punch out, when we do our 8 to 5, our 7 to 5. Then we good. We've done our work. We put our work in. But the reality of it is, our real work has just began, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you know, and like I said, those are the myths as men that we have to break, that we have to kind of get past and start to see, you know, what godly masculinity looks like. Right, you know, what it really means to be the man that God calls us to be, right? You know, not what the world tells us, not what we grew up with, and you know, but truly what the man that God calls us to be.
Yeah, you know what, I totally agree with that, and I totally agree, because, you know, if we're not doing what God said, then what are we doing? If we're not leading the way Jesus led, what are we doing? You, that's the most important thing I can tell any young man. And this is something I heard from a lot of brothers. Do what Jesus did. Go where Jesus went.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do what Jesus did. You know what I'm saying? Let's do what Jesus did. And he led not from the rear. He led from the front. Because I can tell you, I never liked praying out loud. I still don't. Because I feel like I sound crazy. I feel like my thoughts and my words don't always line up. So I've never been one of those really confident guys. Even when I was leading a church, even when I was pastoring a church, I never was one of those really confident guys who always jumped up because, oh, I could pray. I've met some guys, I like to call them arrogant, but hey, they feel like they were Smiths. So I let them do what they do. But I've never been that guy. And it was a role that I had to pick up. See, a lot of us as young men, if we're not churched as young men, young boys, we feel like we don't know how to church. We feel like we don't know how to, that we don't know how to pray over the food. And that's an insecurity that a lot of men have. I like to tell men all the time, man, don't worry about that. You do it the way you know how to do it. Man, God will train you up. God will fix you. He'll bring somebody your way who will help you if you got problems learning. But then again, you want to know how to study a book. If you don't have the book, you go to the library, right? That's what church
right.
is. That's what church is. You know, that's why we go to church. That's why we have brothers. That's why we fellowship. You just talked about your men's ministry. Another thing what we can do is we can get involved in our men's ministries, and we can learn from other brothers like yourself, like myself. You know, a lot of things that we as men, we can do a lot of these things, and we can push forward, but we have to do it. We can't just expect we can't just expect it to just fall in our laps and we just going to be all right. It doesn't work like that. Am I right or wrong?
You're right. You know, we have to put the work in. right? And I would go a step further, right? You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of men out there who are thinking like, okay, well, I don't need, you know, I feel like I'm doing well for myself. And the challenge is this, right? Not just to stay like, okay, if you are doing well for yourself, then who are you pouring into as a man? Right, you know,
yeah.
And I think that's the bigger group. Those men who feel like they've been accomplished, they made it. And I'm not going to argue with you, but what I am going to say, if you're already there, you need to be reaching behind and pulling two or three brothers up with you. Right, you know, God didn't bless you and put you in the position that you're in for you to just sit there and celebrate and just enjoy it. You know, He puts you there because you know He wants you to lead others. Right. So, and I don't think we talk too many times to men like that. Those men who have kind of made it, and they're really just operating their own success and not thinking about how do I reach back and pull somebody else up? How do I invest
right.
into the young men and give them just a bit of what I have, you know, so that maybe that can help them get on the right track. Maybe it'll help them get on the right road.
All right. Well, hey, there we have it, ladies and gentlemen. there we have it, man. Jason, thank you. I just want to say this, man. I'm looking forward to talking about this a little more. I'm looking forward to just talking about it a little bit more because I think this is going to be one of the hottest topics. I struggle with it, and so we'll talk a little bit more about this next week, Jason. But I want to get into how do we handle the struggles that we have between our children and ourselves, or our spouses and ourselves? I want to talk a little bit about that managing that, but also talk a little bit more about this. Okay.
That sounds good, man.
Sounds good. You want to leave us with anything? We got about 30 seconds. We're a little bit over, so I'm gonna take about another 30 seconds, and we'll be good.
Nah, let's keep on grinding.
We're gonna keep on grinding. We're gonna keep on pushing it. I know that's how we have it. So I just want to say thank y'all for showing up. We'll be back next week. We'll talk a little bit more about this, spend an hour with us. You know what we say about this time. Find something you love, chase it, embrace it, and that is your relentless pursuit. This is Jason and Cedric. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. God bless you, and we love you. Take care.
You wanna test the flame, yeah, I wanna fly, but I'm the one to blame. feel the pain that I felt. I was looking out for them instead of myself. So many people I counted on and look, they not here, yeah. Must be God, cause I don't know how I got here. Times I wish my pops was here. Hardcore, I ain't drop a tear. Even though it's been a couple of years, I still ain't processed yet. I was out here gambling with my life and almost lost a bet. Gained a lot of love and I gained a lot of hate with that. I know we all go through pain. Know we all go through pain. Maybe we can talk about it someday. Small feels just like yesterday.